Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into this all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by the great Justice Mosqueda of Acme Packing Company. When I say this is one of our more wide-ranging episodes when it comes to topics, this is definitely one of our more wide-ranging episodes when it comes to topics. Trust me on that one. I think you're really going to enjoy it. I know I certainly did. It was a ton of fun, so we'll get to that in just a moment. Before we get there, I want to go over today's injury report, sponsored and brought to you by Habish, Habish, and Rotier. This, remember, is a simulated injury report only. Neither of these teams, the Dolphins nor the Packers, actually practiced on Monday. So they're simulating what they think the injury report would be if the teams actually practiced, but they didn't practice. So take it for what it's worth. I think this will be worth keeping an eye on through the remainder of the week, of course. But for now, this is what the Packers and Dolphins submitted as their estimated injury report for Monday. From a did not participate status, for the Packers, Jaire Alexander with his knee injury, Edgerrin Cooper with his hamstring injury, Romeo Doubs with his concussion, John Fitzpatrick with a back injury, and then Isaiah McDuffie with an ankle injury. All five of those, per their estimates, would not have practiced on Monday. Three of those we knew, right, or at least assumed, Jaire, Edgerrin Cooper, and Romeo Doubs. We knew Jaire wasn't going to be back at least this quick. Edgerrin Cooper, maybe some hope he could have potentially been back, but he was not practicing. Not a surprise there. And Romeo Doubs coming off the concussion, you knew that was going to happen. John Fitzpatrick, not sure when that injury flared up or whatever may have happened or caused that, but he would not have practiced. And then Isaiah McDuffie with an ankle injury. The noteworthy ones there, just, I mean, obviously like Jaire and Cooper are the huge noteworthy ones, but the interesting ones there, John Fitzpatrick, if he can't go, you're kind of down to two tight ends, right? You've got Ben Sims and Tucker Kraft. Now, they do have Messiah Swinson on the practice squad, but overall, like, you're kind of left with two at the moment. And it's tough to bring anyone in right now because you've got a game in, you know, 3 days, right? So 2 days as you're listening to this on Tuesday. So it's really difficult to kind of bring anyone at this moment. So if Fitzpatrick can't go, I would assume Messiah Swinson potentially gets called up, or they could just go with two. And if they want a third tight end, we saw Kadeem Telfort brought in some goal line packages, right? But you're very thin at that position. If all of a sudden Kraft or Sims were to go down, you're left with only one tight end. So we could see Messiah Swinson called up if Fitzpatrick can't go. And then Isaiah McDuffie would be the other one where you're left with three linebackers, right? You only have in that situation, Quay Walker, Eric Wilson, and Tyron Hopper. And Hopper, you know, outside of garbage time last week, played one snap ahead of that in his career so far. So that would be extremely interesting. They have Jamin Davis on the practice squad that they could call up, and that could be in play if, in fact, Isaiah McDuffie can't go in this game. So again, Jaire Alexander, Edgerrin Cooper, Romeo Doubs, John Fitzpatrick, and Isaiah McDuffie, the five that did not practice. Kenny Clark, Josh Jacobs, Elton Jenkins, Josh Myers, and Rashid Walker were all limited. Jacobs, Jenkins, and Clark were all with just veteran rest. So that's great news there. And then Josh Myers was listed as limited, but not with his wrist injury, with a pectoral injury. So that'll be one worth keeping a little bit of an eye on as well. From a Dolphins standpoint, Teron Armstead, Tyus Bowser, Calais Campbell, Kendall Fuller, Jordan Poyer, Anthony Walker Jr. all did not participate in practice, or again, would not have participated in practice if said practice actually existed. Calais Campbell and Jordan Poyer on that list were just vet rest. So those two likely going to be good to go. The rest did not participate in some capacity. Limited were Tyreek Hill, Alec Ingold, Benito Jones, Jalen Ramsey, and Isaiah Wynn. And full participants included Julian Hill, Javon Holland, Robert Jones, and Patrick McMorris. Those are the injury reports for both teams. Again, with it just being a simulated situation, not sure how much we can glean from it on this particular day, but we'll absolutely keep a super close eye on it on Tuesday and Wednesday as we get to those final injury reports and see who's actually listed as questionable, doubtful, etc., and out for this game, and how that could actually impact Packers Dolphins as we get closer to the game and preview it on Thursday. Now, without any further ado, here's our wonderful conversation with the one and only Justice Mosqueda. What's up, friends? We are now joined by the wonderful Justice Mosqueda, joining us from Acme Packing Company. You can find him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. Are you on the blue sky yet, Justice? You're on the blue sky, right?
Yeah, I signed up when I saw a bunch of Packers fans out there. So come on, Bo.
There is a lot of Packers fans out there. So if you guys haven't signed up yet, make sure to do so. It just feels like one huge Packers community, quite honestly. But yeah, it's kind of been fun just kind of seeing everyone over there. But great to see you over there as well. Great to see you here, Justice. Let's start off Packers 49ers. Per usual, the floor is yours. Give us your nerdiest, best, and most amazing take in the entire history of the world.
I don't know about most amazing take. It felt like a big waste of time to me.
Yeah.
I mean, felt inevitable. That, like, yeah, especially once they were like, yeah, Brandon Allen has a broken thumb and he fumbled the first drive. No, or not,
he has a broken thumb. Broken, I didn't even hear about this.
He had a broken finger. Yeah, they showed it in the broadcast. It was all taped up and stuff. And I was like, okay, this is
why would you not use Josh Dobbs in that situation?
Don't ask me. Why would you only run the ball, what was it, three times in the entire first half? I don't know. It ended up working in the second half a little bit, but
yeah,
it just felt like it was inevitable. They were losing. They just lost too many stars. Once Lenore dropped out too, that first drive, I know he came back in the game, but then everyone was like, you know, Fred Warner was the only starter on the defense for the playoffs. And he's the only guy who returned to the team and is healthy right now. And I'm like, this is a good,
no,
we're not learning that much.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, if you took all of the players for both teams that did not play in that game and started a team with them and then just filled it with like XFL guys, like,
yeah,
I think it might have been able to beat the 49ers in that game. And I think it might actually beat, like, because you got Brock Purdy, right? Mm. You got Jair Alexander, Edgerrin Cooper, Brandon Ayuk, Trent Williams, Nick Bosa, Tre'Varius Ward. You got even their punter, Mitch Wichnowsky, you know, going, yeah. Like, if you, like, you have, you could build like a really amazing core of a team and then like just fill it with like randos. And I think you could actually be better than some teams in the league.
Jordan Morgan. Yeah. Everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone. Yeah. No, that'd be, honestly, that's better than a expansion draft. So.
Oh yeah. Sure. Big time. Yeah, yeah, it's unfortunate that it came down that way. I mean, Green Bay will take the victory. No worries about that. That's nice. And they certainly have plenty of tough games upcoming. In fact, I think a few weeks ago, like, this game against Miami didn't look as tough. I think it looks a whole heck of a lot tougher now. The game against the Saints pre-Rizzy looked much easier than it does now. Like, they're certainly rejuvenated under him. It still should be a win for Green Bay, but they look like a much different team. The Bears just almost beat Green Bay a week ago, and despite them still being kind of bad and finding ways to lose, like, they're better than they were in that two, three game stretch where they like lost to the Patriots by 20. So that game kind of looks harder. So a lot of those games, and then of course Detroit, Minnesota and Minnesota, Seattle and Seattle just kind of basically shut out Arizona. So like, I think the rest of the schedule kind of looks harder than you expected it at least a few weeks ago. So getting a cakewalk win against the 49ers, I don't necessarily mind it.
Yeah. And honestly, the playoff stuff helps a lot, right? Where you didn't knock San Francisco out of the playoffs, but you knocked them out of the wild card. And that's important enough. You look at, you know, I know you've been using like the New York Times simulator, right?
Yep.
And I looked at that. I think I did the math on it and it was like 91% chance the Packers make it into the wild card.
Yes.
And, you know, really, I mean, you're just trying not to get that last wild card spot with the way things are looking right now, right? Where you're like, ah, I'd rather play whoever wins the West or whoever wins the South instead of the Eagles in Philadelphia in the first round, right?
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, just keep stacking wins. It's going to be kind of boring down the stretch. It seems outside of the West and South and maybe that last seed in the NFC wild card, things are kind of decided. Like, maybe there's a little jostling from, you know, the Vikings to the Lions, but outside of that, there's not many other threats.
Did you look at the 49ers odds of making the playoffs as of today?
It wasn't good. I know it was below 5% for the wild card.
It is. Right now I'm looking at it. When I first started, it was like at 5%. Right now it's at 7% total. and 5% for the wild, or sorry, 2% for the wild card, 5% for hosting the wild card, 93% out, less than 1% chance of getting obviously a bye week. There's no chance of finishing first overall. No. They have a tough schedule too. Like, it's not like completely brutal, but there's enough like really tough games on there: at Bills, at Dolphins, Lions at home, at Cardinals, and then Rams and Bears at home. And just the way that they look right now, I don't know. I mean, again, they'll get some of these guys back and it'll definitely help, but it just did not seem like a very good football team at the moment.
No. And I, certain things about the team too, like I think the Packers pass rush did decent, like on a relative scale, that was one of their better performances this year. I
agreed.
Think. And I'm like, ah, for your offensive line, like, oh, I'm worried about the Niners offensive line. Like,
yep.
I don't know. That whole game was just, it felt weird. It felt like a waste of time. Why are you not using Christian McCaffrey more than like three times in the first half? I understand you're down, but like what you thought throwing with Brandon Allen the entire game was going to bring you a win here. There was no chance in hell that that was what your game plan was. You just tossed it to the side immediately. And, you know, second half, they start running the ball more. They started running play action. It got closer, at least.
Yeah. I was surprised, like, because this was a 10-point game even going into, like, the, what, first few possessions of the second half. Like, it wasn't completely out of reach for San Francisco, yet it totally felt the entire time completely out of reach. It didn't feel like there was ever really any threat. I was talking to Nagler about this for his show on Cheesehead TV, Let's Talk Football, and we were talking about kind of like that end of the play or end of the you know, first half, you know, shot play to Watson. And then they really kind of took two more shot plays kind of after that. It felt to us like they were going for the kill shot right then and there of just like, let's just end this right now. The sooner we can get this to garbage time and get some of these guys in, we've got a game on Thursday coming up. Like if we could find a way to really get this to garbage time early, that would be amazing. It felt like right then and there, they were going for the jugular and being like, we don't want this to have any sort of like little, like they're hanging around. And unfortunately they dropped the deep shot. They can't connect on the other two. You know, it takes them a little bit till they get some of those turnovers in the second half to really put it out of reach. And then finally towards the end, they can kind of get into that garbage time and get some of their subs in. But if they just connect on that play to Watson and Watson hangs onto that one, I think that one ends up probably a lot uglier, a lot sooner. And I think we might see some of those subs come in even maybe beginning of fourth quarter right thereafter.
We finally made it. It's Thanksgiving week, and that means even more football to digest all throughout this wonderful week. Miami's coming to Green Bay for an epic matchup on Thursday Night Football. And let's just say it, Jordan Love is owed a turkey leg this year. But that's not all we're looking forward to this week. We're also looking forward to another winning week on Prize Picks. And with Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, when you sign up, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Now, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off, which ones aren't, make your picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. Now, this week, I am going with Tyreek Hill against Green Bay. Yes, you heard me right. I'm going with Tyreek Hill against Green Bay. I'm also going with Tucker Kraft against Miami's defense. Then on Sunday, I'm going with James Cook against San Francisco on Sunday Night Football. And I expect both Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson to put on a show in the Sunday afternoon slot. The best part is there are a ton of options out there for you to choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game.
Yeah, I do think that the subs and the whole rotation thing, I do wonder how much of that played a factor in this game. I know LaFleur... After the game, they were asking him about Josh Jacobs and, you know, do you have it in your mind to, you know, start rotating guys and stuff like that in game, knowing that, you know, you have a Thursday coming up. And he was like, no, you can't think about that. But then you look at like the defense specifically, one, Stokes did not need to be in that game. So I don't know if that's a coaching staff thing. Like,
why is Stokes? They can't quit him.
Why is Stokes back? Stokes wasn't back last week, right?
No, but they just can't quit him.
So he's rotating there. The defensive line, if you go look at the snap counts, you can find those at APC, by the way. just nuts. Like everyone played like 20 snaps and that was it. Like everyone got a chance at this game. And I know there was garbage time at the end, but that was like 7 snaps for the defensive side. You know, Tyron Hopper gets in for his first action. You know, we get a Zane Anderson appearance, the blessed Zane Anderson appearance. But yeah, I do wonder if like, at least on the defensive side, they were like, yo, if we don't have to go, let's not expend our energy. You know what it kind of felt like, man? It felt like that terrible Mike Tyson, Jake Paul fight.
It was awful. It was absolutely
awful. Neither are really trying that hard. They're just trying to like cash this check.
It very much felt that way. Like I'm talking more of the fight in this case, that it felt like they were trying to cash the check and that there was bizarro stipulations or I don't know. It was just a weird, weird fight. I don't get it. I don't get boxing. But like every single time, and this is like, not that we need to get on a tangent here, but every single time you have something like this that takes place that everyone gets an appetite for, they're like, this could be really cool. Like, let's actually see it happen. Every single time, one of two things happens. Either it's this, where like there's like 5 punches landed the entire time and it's just like a complete snore fest, or like someone clearly went, like the fight right before where somebody clearly wins the fight and it gets handed to the other person by decision. And it's like everyone, the announcers, like everyone in the stands, everyone watching at home, everyone's like, yes, very clearly this other person won this fight and it's not even close, but your reigning, defending, undisputed champion is the other person who got beat up the entire match. One of two things happens in big fights every single time. And it's like, how do you get into a sport like that?
Yeah, it is tough. I don't know, grow up Mexican and you'll see boxing all the time.
I don't know, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. We can put in a good word for you.
All right, deal. I'm in, like, flip. If you get a good fight, like there's nothing quite like a good fight, but all right, enough about fighting, about boxing. Let's go back to that. Like I just want to go back to Eric Stokes for a second. I don't understand that for a minute of like why they are at this point. I'm more convinced they're going to sign him to like a 7-year extension more than like just bench him permanently. Like it just doesn't seem like they can ever quite give him up. He played, I think, 4 or 5 snaps the week before. And then this one, he was basically right there 50-50 with Carrington Valentine splitting snaps the entire time. It just is the weirdest thing ever. It's very Packers of them.
Yeah, and I went back and I ended up watching their targets actually, because I wanted to check those out. Because I know Carrington had like, they credited him at least on like NFL Pro with like 60 yards that he allowed. But like one of them is a screen where he's setting the edge.
That's right.
Not his problem. Another one was there's early on.
Kittle one that's legit. The Kittle one that's
the Kittle
legit.
The Kittle one's legit. He's in his back pocket. Kittle makes a play. I don't know. Like he's in good position. You live with those ones. Another one was throw into the flat when he was the. He was a corner in cover 3, and it was just Eric Wilson not being able to fly outside. I guess he ended up getting counted as like near, quote unquote, nearest defender, right?
Weird. Yeah.
And then there was another one that was like not a big deal. I can't remember what it was. So I was like, okay, so he allowed like the Kittle one. Not the worst thing.
Did you see PFF's grade on him?
Give it to me. Let's see.
I think he was the lowest graded player on the team on defense. He was the lowest graded. They gave him a 29.5 lowest graded player on defense.
Whoa.
I went through and graded everything for obviously every player. I got through defense already. I'm not through the offense. I'm only, I don't know, not enough plays in an offense. I'm only 10 plays in an offense, but I finished defense. And I had a slight negative on Carrington, like a very slight negative grade on him. PFF had him as a 29 something and clearly the lowest graded player. And I'm like, usually PFF, it's not like we're always completely in lockstep by any means, but like usually there's like a small degree of difference. If anything, there's not anything like majorly drastic, and they just nuked him in this game. And I, for the life of me, can't really figure out why. Cause I didn't, it wasn't like you blew the roof off the place or was just dominant the entire game. Gave him a couple completions here or there, but like, I didn't think it was anything that bad at all. Let's see what they had him as. They credit him with 3 catches on 4 targets. 68 yards is what they credit him for in this game.
Three on four. So yeah, that should be similar. But again, like 2 of those are plays that are like not even really, he's not really supposed to impact those plays, or he did his job. Like the screen that he allowed, he's setting the edge, which is what you want to do. You don't want to let a screen guy get to the sideline. So, I thought the Stokes thing, there's that one where, you know, Brandon Allen missed the throw, right?
Correct.
And the guy kind of slipped. But yeah, there was that dig over the middle of the field where Stokes is supposed to be right there. Then you get into a change of direction situation and it's just like, whoop, 5 yards of separation. It's like
easy.
The problem. And that was not a star. That was not George Kittle, by the way, making a back shoulder catch or whatever the hell it was. So
no.
I'm so dumb with Stokes. We were talking about it in the APC Slack and we're like, I don't know. Would you rather see Corey Ballantyne out there or Stokes? I'm like, Robert Rochelle, but if you cut Stokes, you don't lose anything. Is kind of the point, right? It's just like
he doesn't play teams at all. Does he play any teams? I don't think he plays any teams. Does he? Maybe a little bit.
I think so.
Yeah,
I don't think so. But yeah, no good. I'm done with Stokes. I'm done.
What did you think of Quay in this one? I liked overall his game in this one. I have another question to follow up on this Quay thing, but what did you think of Quay?
He was solid in this game. I still don't trust him. Shout out to PFF for giving him like a 92 grade or whatever the hell it was in this game. The ball hit both of his hands and his face mask. I wonder how big of a grade he gets for that one.
Here, that was my follow-up to this. So for the record, he was also my highest graded defender in this game. However, I did have a negative grade on the drop, and some people were very upset with me for having a negative grade on the drop interception.
Nice ball.
Here's how I defend that. Here's how I look at it. And you can tell me if I'm an idiot if you'd like. Do you remember the play in week one where Xavier McKinney picks off the pass against Philadelphia and he kind of ranges over from an entirely different area of the field and picks off the ball? Like if Xavier McKinney makes this unbelievable play on that one and ranges over and reads it perfectly and gets to it like a zone he's not even supposed to be in and makes this unbelievable play and it ends up bouncing off of his hands. Like, all right, like I'm more of he just was awesome in getting there in the first place. Or if Quay was in man-to-man coverage in this play and he was sticking with the wide receiver, the tight end perfectly, and, you know, got up in his face and again, either made like a diving attempt at a pick or some sort of contested pick situation, but covered him perfectly up until that point. Again, a little bit more of like, all right, he didn't catch the pass, but like he was awesome in coverage and did everything. Like he literally drops into the most basic zone possible, ranges a little bit to his left, and it clanks right off. It's like the easiest interception you're ever going to get in your life. I don't know how you like look at anything on that play and be like, yep, this is a positive. And like the only thing that his only job on that play was to catch the ball that gets thrown right to him. And he didn't do that. To me, that's like almost like a turnover worthy play. So I didn't like crucify the dude for it. It didn't like give him like this major, like you nuked the game. What are you doing, you idiot? But like, to me, that's definitely a negative graded play.
I'm telling you, if you're Quay, all you're doing is hearing about it from the Packers and their players today. You're getting clowned. You're getting clowned because that thing jumped up right on top of you. I dropped a pick one time, and I was at the end, and like the ball came out a little low, I guess, and it just like snuck up on me. And I think about it every day because I'm like, I could have gone, dude. I could have gone the whole way. It would have happened.
Do you know how I know it's a negative play? Because three of his teammates for about 8-9 seconds after the play are standing by him still like this, with their hands on his head, like just staring at him. Like, how did this possibly happen? That's how I know it's a negative play, when three of his teammates are so dumbfounded of how it could possibly not have been an interception in that scenario. That's your tell. That's your tell right there.
Every DB was like,
I know. And I'm sure they've all been there at some point. It's all clanged off their hands. And again, like the sucky thing is like, I thought this again was one of the better games that he's played overall. I loved how he played downhill. And to me, the conversation should much more be about that and just him again playing a more solid game in this one. But yeah, that one to me, that would have been like obviously putting it over the top. And it clearly would have been, in my opinion, his best game as a Packer if he picks that one off. But alas, I still thought this was a positive step. But to your point, I'm not, you know, getting my expectations high that this is going to be a weekly thing from Quay.
Yeah, we have such a big record, right? That I'm just not going to believe that on some random week, it's not coming out of a bye. There wasn't like a schematic change or anything like that he just pieced it together. I mean, if nothing against him, I mean, I wish the best for him.
Yep.
I hope he has a Hall of Fame career for the Packers. I'm just going to need to see a little bit more of that before I start buying into any sort of level of consistency.
Totally agreed. I see some people upset with, or maybe not upset, maybe that's a little bit strong, but still not a believer in Jordan Love's play after this game. Thoughts on Jordan's overall play?
Man, that drop pass that Bo Melton had, not even the Christian Watson one, the Bo Melton one.
Are you talking about the Dobbs one behind him?
The one up the right sideline.
Oh, the Melton one. Got it.
Yeah. Like one of the best throws I've seen. Like, guys, come on. I understand, like, he's not the most consistent player. I think the worst throw, honestly, the worst rep was that blitz that they sent the Niners. And there was just a guy free. Dude, Kraft is wide open. Kraft is so unbelievably open. Love pre-snap switches the protection. He wanted to get some stuff, you know, just getting the hat on the hat a little bit. I think he wanted to throw the dig to the right. And unfortunately, you know, bit off a little bit more than he could chew. And then by the time he'd get to Kraft, it was just too late. The pressure had impacted the throw. That would have been a really nice one to have. But, like, what more do you want? Watson had the drop. There was the Melton thing.
Dobbs had a drop that almost ended in an interception.
Yeah.
I thought the very first throw of the game, it's really hard to tell on the tape. I think it's outside where it's not totally a drop by Dobbs. I kind of put that a little bit on Jordan in that one, but it's really tough to tell if Dobbs actually got his hands on it or not. But that's, you know, potentially one that could have been completed. And then there's the little play along the sidelines to Jacobs where Jordan expects him to continue up the sideline so he can lead him. And Jacobs just kind of sat down expecting him to kind of sit in that area. Yeah. So it's just more of a miscommunication than anything. But they're this close.
Also, you got to know running backs aren't laying out for that either. You got to put that thing on them.
That's true.
They're hearing footsteps immediately. All those boys see is contact inside the tackles. So when you get them outside, they're like, where is he? Where is he? He's coming from my head.
Yeah, that's very true. I did think the two sacks that he took too, he probably could have either stayed in the pocket or maybe done something a little bit different. I thought he maybe kind of ran himself into those, at least the first one for sure. But again, overall, I thought he made a couple of really great throws over the middle, that absolute dime to Watson, a nice throw again, like a perfect throw to Melton as well, that just either again dropped or broken up or whatever it might be. Like, there's plenty of really good stuff on tape once again from Jordan. And I don't know. I don't have any real bones to pick other than the one throw that he didn't see the defender. He talked about it in the post game when I asked about it, and, you know, could have been picked if Watson didn't maybe break it up a little bit. But man, that's one bad decision in 2 weeks for me. I can certainly live with that.
Yeah, for sure. I talked to some people who do like national stuff, right? And they're like breaking down the Packers on a Monday. So they hit me up and they, you know, pick my brain, stuff like that. And one thing that keeps coming by me is people getting excited about Love, not just because of, you know, he's starting to build up that consistency, but the fact that he can get hot, right? And they look at the Packers as this team that they haven't done it yet, right, from a consistency standpoint, like both sides of the ball. I think, what, this game and like the Cardinals game probably, but there's been a whole lot of time in between. Have probably been when the Packers have looked the best. So it's not like they've put together a stretch where they've looked like, you know, they're a team that can, like, you know, is a real 50-50 shot against the Lions on the road and the Eagles on the road and all this stuff and whoever in the AFC, right?
Yep.
But because Love can make some of those crazy throws like the Melton stuff and things like that, they're like, that's a team that I don't want to bet against and that I don't feel safe against if my team is, you know, playing them in the playoffs and stuff. So I don't know. If you got an issue with Love, like, we're in a good spot at the quarterback position still.
Yep.
I understand it's not MVP numbers, but like, I'm excited. Like, you're going into any playoff game with a chance. Cool. There's so many teams that would die for that.
Yep. No, I'm right there with you. And I'm there's actually a decent, like, piece of my being that is sort of excited that they haven't peaked and haven't put everything together yet. Now, we need to see a little bit more proof of concept. I don't know that I feel super comfortable that they can go
you mentioned those 50-50 games. Can they go Seattle on the road, you know, Detroit on the road, Philly on the road, and then a neutral game against KC or Buffalo or whoever it might be, and go back to back to back to back wins against four teams the caliber of that? I don't think I've seen anything quite yet that would lend me to believe that they've played that brand of football yet, but I think they're capable of it if they get hot at the right time and if they start playing a little bit better football, kind of in a similar vein to what we saw at the end of last year. And to me, like, the fact that you've seen pieces of it, right? We've seen games where the explosive offense is there, like they're hitting big play after big play. We've seen games where inside the 20s, the efficiency, they can run past, like find anything that they want. And then we saw in this game a 5-for-5 game in the red zone where in between the 20s, it wasn't always the prettiest picture that they painted. But overall, like, they go 5-for-5 in the red zone. If all of a sudden you just put those together, and I think I saw somebody post today, they're still third in offensive DVOA, despite playing 2.5 games with the backup quarterback, another like 2.5 with Jordan Love being like a shell of himself, and one game on an entirely slippery field, and just not still putting any of that together, and they're still up there that high. Like, that is unbelievable. And I still have a lot of faith in the weapons, the play caller, the quarterback, the running back, the offensive line. Like, if they get it all together, I still think it's looked the hell out for the rest of the league.
Yeah. And speaking of a guy that somehow we haven't really brought up, I mean, I guess we talked about him with the pass catcher stuff, but Josh Jacobs. Oh boy.
That was some 2022 Josh Jacobs justice.
Yeah. And he was good last week too, man.
Yeah. Remember? He's been since really like Jacksonville game. Like, it's been a handful of weeks now. Even Detroit, he started off awesome until they got away from running the football because they were down and tried to get back in that game.
Yeah. No, man, that's a really impressive back. That's a tough guy to break down. Yeah. I saw the stat. It was like, you know, he's leading the league in missed tackles and stuff, which doesn't surprise me. It's not that like, he's never going to be the guy who breaks off the like 80-yard run in the same way that like Saquon Barkley does, right?
Right.
But just in terms of just like consistently pushing the pile forward, you're getting positive momentum. You're just a tough dude to bring down. Like, hats off to the staff.
There were some of the best like 0 to 1 yard runs that you've seen in this game. Like, just like making people miss matrix style and still finding a way to get positive yards when he had no human right getting positive yards on some of those plays. And did you see how many missed tackles he forced this week per Next Gen Stats?
Mm-mm.
You have a guess?
Like 12?
15, which he is the most anyone's made miss this entire season so far.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I mean, he's great, man. He's great, and they're getting pretty confident in those running backs with the pony package.
Yes.
I think the Chris Brooks stuff is really interesting because he's out snapping Emmanuel Wilson, but Wilson is getting more carries.
Yep.
Because Brooks is coming into the game, and he's being the second guy in the two-back looks, and he's kind of either, you know, being the extra blocker, the decoy, or whatever for Josh Jacobs a little bit. And I think that's interesting. The Packers now, Scheme Twitter is getting into the spinner stuff that we've been talking about all year. Oh, they're like, yo, do you guys know the Packers have like basically like a, you know, a youth football system offense that they sprinkle in every once in a while? People are getting excited about that. It's a fun team. It's interesting to see how they get everything figured out in the run game, where, you know, they had a man in motion be the ball carrier on counter. That's not normal.
No,
like, you don't see these things usually, especially at the NFL level. So
I just want to go back to something really quick, because I don't know how important this is, and maybe this is absolutely nothing, but so my youngest son was on a flag football team, and one of the other kids on the team, his father is in the Packers organization. I'll just kind of leave it at that. And I forget who he said. He told me, I don't know if it was LaFleur or one of the other like offensive coaches put together like a youth football playbook of like different packages and different things to use. And like, it wouldn't even like shock me at all of what you're saying. If they're like, they took things from that, like, oh yeah, like that actually could work in like some of the stuff that we're doing, like to some extent of like, cause you said like some of the stuff that they're doing there is almost like a youth football package. And like, they literally put one, somebody in the organization, I forget who it was, somebody in the offensive staff put together a youth football, flag football package. So it exists there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, again, the only time I've seen it has been at the youth level, and a lot of people like it. But yeah, I mean, it's all the spinner stuff, right? It's when Jordan Love does the full 360 and you're like, who has the ball, right?
Yep.
It's that whole thing. So it's a pretty well documented offense. I mean, there's not that many things that you can do at the youth level. You're not throwing the ball. I hate to spoil it to you. Any 6-year-old quarterbacks who are watching this, you're not throwing the football at the youth level.
My son is 6 years old. I've seen them try. It's not pretty.
It doesn't work. They can't hit the dig. Can't hit the dig. It's basically like the way I kind of think about it, it's like play action for the running game.
Yeah.
And we don't really have that outside of like draws, right? Because it's the same thing with like the starburst kick return, if you've ever seen that, where they return it and then everyone turns their back. Yeah, everyone turns their back and then they spread out. And you're like, I have no idea which one of these five guys has the ball. It's kind of like that. And I think the Packers are seeing the benefits of early adopter.
Can we see a starburst kick return? Is that next?
I mean, they only have two returners, right? You're only allowed two guys back there, but sure, why not, man? Let's do it.
That's going to be the next thing. Or maybe you just have five guys in the backfield and do the same thing in the backfield. They're going to come up with something next. But no, I love the creativity, and I just like that they're using it. And I'll be interested to see how much longer they can run it before maybe teams catch on a little bit more. But right now it's working great. It also feels like...
Well, the good thing about it is they're running it out of the pony stuff where they had staples over the years, right? How many times have we seen the two-back stuff and we're like, okay, it's going to be inside zone and then the other guy's going to bubble out of the backfield and it's just going to be an RPO. Well, now they're using this as like a constraint, right? They're using it as like a tendency breaker because they're still throwing those bubbles and stuff like that. It's just not as obvious. And I'm like, thank you. This is exactly what I asked for.
And I love the Brooks and Jaden Reed backfield where then Brooks motions in and they fake it to him and then Reed gets up the sideline and the little wheel, like just chef kiss stuff. Like that is gorgeous. Obviously we saw that wrinkle in the offense. They did go 5 for 5 in the red zone. Anything that you noticed of that they did? I mean, obviously they run block better because they were able to get Jacobs the three touchdowns, but anything else that you saw that was like, all right, that seems to be smarter or better, or did they just execute better?
I think they just executed better. They got better matchups, right? The Bears were just really good, you know, in that area.
The 49ers have Devondre Campbell.
Come on now. You know.
I had to. I'm sorry. I had to. They're utilizing him correctly, though.
Sure. As a 4-3 Sam. Same position that he played with the Falcons that he was like, yeah, I don't like this. This doesn't fit me.
Yeah. What an interesting scenario that was. Like, complains about the team where he won a first team all pro, utilizing him incorrectly.
Yeah.
Oy vey. Fun times. We talked about the defensive line rotation. Did you see Tyron Hopper got a snap before even garbage time?
Before garbage time? No, I did not see that.
It was base defense early in the third quarter. He was in as a base defender. He got one snap, and he actually was involved in making the tackle on the play. So just one play. I don't know what led to it. I don't know if a linebacker, you know, had a equipment malfunction or if they actually wanted to get him in the game on purpose, but he did have one snap. I posted it on Twitter if anyone wants to view it, but he got one snap. It was early third quarter in a 4-3 defense look. So one snap, we're in.
We did it. Yeah, good for him. I saw... You know, in the garbage time stuff, he was kind of involved in like one of those TFLs.
Yep.
So
he kind of missed the tackle, but was responsible for
involved.
Involved. But he got there, made a great read, immediately shot into the backfield, and then like, you know, kind of did the thing where he like kind of like swings him around, but he swings him back into the backfield. I think that's a play where it's really difficult to see who forces the fumble on it was the final play. I think it's Brenton Cox who actually like rips it out. But that was overall, I thought in the few plays that he was in, he looked the part, which is promising, I guess.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's the same guy I saw in college, which, skinny little dude who can run around. The defense was interesting. I wonder how much of it changes up, especially against Miami they have just such a defined structure. You're not going to have a lack of weapons in the same way that the Niners have in that game, or lack of a trigger man either, right? So it's just so different that I don't know how much we could take out of it. I think getting guys rest and heavily rotating the team is probably was probably the right way to go.
All right, before we get to Packers-Dolphins, the one other nerdy thing that was kind of interesting to me was Jacob Monk being inactive for that game and Travis Glover getting activated. You want to know my guess on this?
Go for it.
I think because we've seen Dillard being active, we've seen who's the other tackle? Travis Glover, of course, but then we've seen Telfort being active. I think one of the first games, one of the first few games he was inactive. Now we've seen Monk being active. I actually wonder if this is like a thing of like the three best players in practice every week are going to be the next guys up and we don't care who it is. And like whoever they've got some sort of competition going on and whoever those three players are that practice best throughout the week are going to get the activation on game day and the fourth one's not going to get activated. That's just my random guess.
Maybe. I was, you know, worried a little bit what the heck the interior offensive line was going to look like without Monk, especially with, you know, Jordan. Now Monk was kind of like six man on that offensive line. You would have thought. So he's inactive. They brought up three tackles. I didn't watch the garbage time for the offense, so I don't know how who moved in the guard. I know Walker stayed out there. I know Sean Ryan stayed out there. So I'm going to assume Walker was left tackle. Sean Ryan played center, and then two of those three tackles ended up playing guard. But those are all three. Like true tackles. Like you don't want those guys on the inside. I think if there was actually an injury during the game, we probably see like Elton Jenkins move to center, Tom move to guard, and then them bring a tackle off of the bench.
Do you want to know what the five lineup was? I'm just looking at it now. It is Rashid at left tackle. Yep. It is Telford at left guard, Sean Ryan at center, Travis Glover at right guard, and Andre Dillard at right tackle.
Dillard is supposed to be the left tackle.
Which you would think, yes. So that's weird. But they didn't want to put, I'm sure they didn't want to switch Walker. So they just kept him out there. You didn't want to keep Tom in the game. You don't want to keep Elton in the game. They probably could have kept Myers in the game, but he's beat up. So you probably don't want to keep him in the game.
I mean, Telfort and Travis at guard, that might be the largest guard combo in NFL history. Just
Telford did do a bunch of guard stuff in mini camp where he was out there quite a bit there. They did like actually do some cross training of him there. I don't ever recall Travis Glover being inside a single time. I could just be misremembering. Not like I was really tracking Travis Glover's guard play all that much, but I don't ever remember it. And it probably was like, we literally don't care at this point. Like we're just going to put five guys out there. We're just going to run the ball four times anyway. It really doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, that was interesting.
Those backs running hard the entire game. Because I think, dude, that's Sharks' taste of blood, where they're like, I feel quit in this defense. I'm about to put film up so that if anything happens to me in Green Bay, at least someone's going to be able to look outside of the organization and say, like, whoa, that guy can do that. And Brooks and Wilson were both just running their asses off.
Yes, they were. And if you're Jacob Monk, you got to be like, this is the game. Of course, we get to garbage time and everyone gets in the game. And this is the one I'm inactive for. Thanks a lot, guys. All right, let's talk Packers Dolphins. You kind of talked about, first of all the weapons that Miami has. Tua is doing an unbelievable job playing within the system, accurate, on time, within rhythm. It looks really, really good for them right now. If you're Jeff Hafley, first of all, how are you game planning this one? Because these guys can obviously beat you at all layers of the field.
You just got to cloud everything. Absolutely everything. No free releases. Make them earn it. Make Tua complete a deep ball that doesn't have a crazy arc on it, right, that you can't make up with your foot speed. Hope the pass rush gets there. I mean, that's the only way to do it. I know you don't want to get in people's faces when you're playing really good skill talent, but the way they just like check everything down, and there's so much pre-snap motion and all that stuff that you got to get in front of them, and you just got to make a couple things tough for them, and you got to make them execute. And that's really it. I mean, the Dolphins, I've seen like their passing game DVOA and stuff like that, where, you know, the first half, I guess I should say first quarter of the season, right, it's no good. And then the second quarter, you know, they've been like top 10, right? So they're kind of clicking right now. Let's find out. They're feeling themselves a little bit too much. He was a shit talker, and I always forget that he is. Because I'm like, a quarterback who plays like that wouldn't be super confident. No, just confidence through the roof. He was like, you know, we're going to dispel the myth of Lambeau Field. I'm like, okay, all right, let's see it.
I think, too, they're wanting to dispel the myth of that they can't play in cold conditions, it sounds like, too, because it sounds like it has not gone well when they've played in any cold conditions whatsoever. So, they want to change some narratives, apparently, and we'll see if they can do it or not. Up to Green Bay to stop them.
Just hope these wide receivers are wearing molded cleats. Molded cleats, no studs. Let's wait to get the studs on until the second half.
Like, they figure out, like, oh, the field's kind of slippery if we don't have the
right cleats on.
Weird. Oh. It's funny. Weird. Nobody's ever had that happen before. How about offensively for Green Bay? How do you kind of go about attacking this Dolphins defense? Just run your stuff?
Just run your stuff. I feel like this Packers team could do a little bit of everything at this point, right? We're seeing the success of at least the explosives in every facet of the game, so. Do your stuff. Don't get penalties. Don't crap out in the red zone. That is all of my suggestions.
Going back to that, not to completely get off topic here, but now I'm like intrigued. Like going back to that 2020 NFL draft at quarterback. 2020, okay. Right?
Yeah. That's Love and Tua.
Yes. Yeah. How are we ranking these quarterbacks today? Because you got Burrow going number one. You've got Tua at 5. You've got Herbert at 6. You've got Jordan at 26. And then, of course, you've got Jalen Hurts later in the draft.
Herbert 1.
Would that be the same if Burrow wasn't hurt? If, like, Burrow's wrist bizarro stuff never happened?
Yeah.
Okay. No, you're just an Oregon stan.
That man is going to be Dan Marino. So I'm excited for it.
I'm a huge Justin Herbert guy. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
I guess Burrow is 2, but it is much closer with Jordan. And then, man, I might take 2 over Hurts. I think I'll go 2 over Hurts. But they're definitely – it's like Herbert tier 2 guys – tier 2 guys to me, at least.
Yeah,
I really don't like Hurts, man, and I don't like Tua, but I think I like Hurts less than Tua.
They're both intriguing. You both have to have the right systems for both of them. Like, I don't think you can't just transport Tua or Hurts into any offense and be like, we're going to be fine or whatever. You have to have a specific plan for both of those guys. Burrow, Love, and Herbert, I feel like, can pretty much survive in pretty much any offense in any conditions and be totally fine.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think Burrow, this is the thing I've always said about Burrow, is that I'm like, he's like Dak. He's like exactly like Dak. You want him to be this spread guy who's running empty and all this stuff. So I do think it's kind of interesting that, like, the Bengals offense is always disjointed between what they do under center and what they do in the shotgun. Like, they really do get under center to run the ball. They go in the shotgun to throw the ball. And that works, but then, like, you know, your play actions and, you know, all of this stuff that we were just talking about, the auxiliaries, right, aren't tied up together. So that was kind of one reason why I was like, I don't know, do I want Jordan? I might want Jordan. Like, ask me at the end of December, I might want Jordan more than Burrow. So that's how close it is to me.
All right, this is totally off topic, but I had a friend asking me these two questions tonight. All right, you have to start a franchise right now with either Jordan Love or CJ Stroud. Who are you taking?
I'm taking Jordan.
All right, Jordan Love or Jaden Daniels?
Jordan. Yeah. I'm not a Jaden Daniels guy.
I'm intrigued by Daniels.
He's going to break.
I said he's Jordan over break. Daniels without hesitating. I didn't hesitate Jordan over Daniels. But I hesitate a little bit more on Stroud and earlier in the year I said Stroud and I didn't really hesitate, but Stroud is definitely having a different year 2 season than we saw in year 1.
Yeah, for sure. I'm in the same boat with you. I probably would have said Stroud to start the year and not so much now. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that there's that many. Someone asked, like, who my top 5 quarterbacks in the NFL were, right? And I think I know the 4 were. It doesn't. The order doesn't matter. It's Josh, Mahomes, Lamar, and Herbert. I think it's those guys. And then I think the 5th guy that I picked was Stafford.
It's fair.
And that's kind of what you want Love to be. But, like, once you get past those top 4, I feel like the player pool for, you know, the Burrow, the Love, the Stafford, the all those guys is pretty big. So,
you know. I would agree. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else that is even in that conversation. You don't have Aaron Rodgers up there? I say very much in jest. Yeah, to me, Lamar, Justin, Patrick, Josh Allen are the 4. And then I agree with you. I think number 5 is a lot more up for grabs / questionable. Yeah, I'm just kind of going through it. I don't know who I would say in that situation.
I think I put a lot of thought into it, and I was like, Stafford. But I know people are like, all the film nerds like Stafford.
He's an unbelievable quarterback. Yeah, he's very, very good.
He can deliver the ball, and he's very consistent. He has a big arm, but I don't know what else you want from me.
I might go if he was healthy. I think I would say Burrow. No question. I think he would be my number 5. I do like Burrow. Or I loved Burrow quite a bit. I don't know exactly what's going on with the wrist injury and how much it's affecting him or not. I do wonder like the offensive line situation in Cincinnati through his tenure has not been great overall. And the Cincinnati Bengals are such a weird ass franchise just in general. So I think if you got Burrow, and I'm not saying he needs like perfect conditions or whatever, but I think if you actually built him a good line and gave him, and he has good weapons clearly, but like if Higgins could actually be out there every single week and stuff like that in a normal franchise, I do wonder if like he would just look like that much more unbelievable. And if he were healthy, but there's a lot of ifs.
I have one question for you, cause I've been sitting on this hypothetical for a couple of days.
Oh, I'm so excited for this.
All right. Your son is a top quarterback in this upcoming draft.
Okay.
If he gets drafted by the Saints, do you sit out a year? The Saints are in such a bad position. Bad
nightmare position from a salary cap standpoint. Like, it's going to get awful. Yeah. It's going to get absolutely awful.
Because I've seen these mock drafts now where they're having first-round pick quarterback. And I'm like, dude, I think it's legitimately better for your career if you just sit out a year and just re-enter the draft. Like, there, you cannot do that.
Yeah.
Because this isn't even the worst part. Like, you're staring down
4 or 5 years.
3 years of hell before the rebuild even really starts.
But here's the other thing, too. If to some extent I had a feeling that the Saints were going to take their medicine over the next 3 years and say, like, we're just going to eat this, like, for 2 or 3 years. Like, we're just going to completely, like, nuke it down to the ground of where we need to get actually financially, like, responsible. And, like, by year 3 or 4, we're actually going to have a normal salary cap situation. I think maybe I could live with it a little bit more and be like, all right, we're cool with that. But you have to really dedicate yourself to this, because otherwise it's going to be an absolute nightmare. But even then, you're missing out on the young years of like the super cheap contract for that quarterback, in this case, my son in the hypothetical. And then you've got to pay him, and now you're, you know, it's a totally different situation. So yeah, it's, I'll say this from a different lens. There is no team, I don't think, in the NFL that I would less rather be a fan of over the next half decade than the New Orleans Saints with the situation that they're in right now.
Yeah, for sure. I was just thinking about it because, you know, people brought up like the Eli Manning stuff, and, you know, people were talking about Arch Manning because he's going to be in the draft next year, Shador Sanders. And I was like, it's pretty lame that they kind of call their shots, right? Like, everyone's kind of happy with the draft system and, you know, you're getting paid your money and all that. But then I was like, man, if I got drafted by the Saints, I think I would really have to think about it, where I'm like, I kind of would take a year off and re-roll the dice. Like,
there's no world in which anyone actually has to sit out a year, though, right? Like, it ends up being a trade before that ever actually happens. But I think you have to threaten it, of course.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the last guy to sit out was Bo Jackson, right? So that was a while ago.
That could be.
You know the Bo Jackson story, right? What happened?
Wait. First of all, I thought there was a quarterback too who had it happen. Was it Bernie Kosar? Like, he was he sat out and then went the supplemental draft, something like that. And somebody like the Browns traded up for like the supplemental draft. There's a Bernie Kosar story there too, somewhere of like how he sat out a draft and then some team traded for the first overall supplemental pick. And then he went supplemental and they took, there's something like that with Bernie Kosar, but no, I don't know if I remember the Bo Jackson story.
So the Bo Jackson thing, he was still playing college baseball when he was at Auburn, and Tampa had convinced the Buccaneers had the first overall pick. Tampa had convinced him that they went through the NCAA and that, you know, he wouldn't have lost baseball eligibility to be able to talk to them about potentially signing as the number one pick in the NFL draft. He goes back to Auburn. They're like, yeah, we just got an NCAA suspension for you. Like, you're done. And I guess it was part of a grand ploy of Tampa being like, we're going to force you out of college athletics so we can use this first overall pick. They take him. He's just like, screw you guys, I'm going to go play baseball. And I'm like, more power to you.
What would be a crazier, like, can you imagine a story today in which somebody like a Bo Jackson or a Deion Sanders actually go between Major League Baseball and the NFL? Like, I can't even possibly, like, it would be the most, like, it still is one of the most insane things ever that both of those guys were able to pull that off at any level, period. Like, that they were able to go and actually play Major League Baseball in the NFL. That is the most absurd thing ever.
Nuts. Absolutely nuts. Or even just how good of a basketball player Charlie Ward was, where he's like, yeah, I won a Heisman, but, like, I'm not going to go play in the NFL.
Yeah, and he was the best quarterback in New York for a while, and he played for the Knicks. Here was the Kosar story. Kosar was a redshirt sophomore at the University of Miami when he announced he was entering the NFL draft in March 1985. At the time, only college seniors and graduates were eligible for the draft. The Minnesota Vikings traded up to the second overall pick in the 1985 NFL draft to draft Kosar, but he opted into the supplemental draft instead. The Browns traded with the Buffalo Bills for the first overall pick in the supplemental draft. The Bills had the first pick because they had the worst record in 1984, and Bernie Kosar and his family identified a loophole that allowed Kosar to enter the supplemental draft to basically avoid Minnesota and go to Cleveland instead. So can you imagine the words now, avoiding Minnesota to go to Cleveland? Like,
yeah,
that doesn't seem like a good career choice in most situations. Not like the Vikings have done anything that special ever, but yeah, the Browns, not exactly it's a different franchise now, right? Like, that Browns team is now the Ravens, right?
Yeah.
So I guess that makes more sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I know supplemental draft was all crazy because they had the USFL guys and all that stuff too when they came in. I mean, Reggie White.
Is Mike Wall still the last successful like supplemental draft pick? Like, they haven't turned out very well.
For Green Bay, yeah, probably. I know that Jalen Thompson, I think, was the last guy taken, and he was pre-pandemic. And he's doing decent as like a nickel safety for Arizona right now. Every year I have to write about, hey, supplemental draft deadline passed. No one signed up.
Nobody. Yeah, it's basically gone entirely by the wayside. Is that an NIL thing where
Yeah, I think it's NIL, and then, you know, everyone got the extra fifth year and stuff like that. The NFL was super strict about who they were going to let in, especially around the pandemic. I think they're less strict now, but they're just not getting any applications because you actually have to file into the draft, right? You have to file to get drafted.
Makes sense. All right, this is probably one of our best, nerdiest episodes I think we've ever done, which is absolutely perfect. So I appreciate that a ton. What do you got cooking at APC this week?
Man, I'm doing everything. We got snap counts. We got all the stuff. We got
supplemental draft conversations. We've got
we got linebacker injuries. I didn't know that this was coming. They put out the estimated injury report.
Yeah, we should talk about that really quick. Monday. We should talk about that. Go for it.
Yeah, so Jair, Edgerrin Cooper, Romeo Doubs were estimated. They didn't actually have a practice today. They're estimated to be a non-participant if they did have a practice. It's very goofy the way that all this stuff is written. None of those are surprises, right? None of them were able to end the game. John Fitzpatrick, who, by the way, had like career high in snaps this past week, the tight end, has a back injury, so he would have been estimated as a non-participant. And then Isaiah McDuffie. If Isaiah McDuffie is actually hurt, I'm pretty concerned for this game because they only have three healthy linebackers in this situation.
It's Jamin Davis time, baby.
People have been saying this for a couple weeks now. So I got to believe it, or I got to see it before I believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you would just expect it to be Quay Walker and Eric Wilson through almost the entirety mm-hmm. of the game. And then a smattering of Tyron Hopper in base defense and probably Jamin Davis.
If one guy goes down, things turn into a circus very quickly. Very quickly. Yeah,
that's probably true. Maybe we'll get some Ketan Oladapo as a nickel linebacker or something.
Portland Never zone. Know. Let's go.
Let's do it. Do they have anyone else on the linebacker depth chart and practice squad besides Jamin?
I think it's just Jamin because they got rid of the A&M kid. We knocked off the A&M.
We knocked him off when we talked about him. We probably shouldn't have said anything about Jamin, although I think he's safe right now, given the injury situation. I was going to say, I thought there were some linebackers. I am interested to see, because I think there were two tight ends cut today, if I remember correctly. Greg Dulcich of Denver and then Muse from Minnesota. Nick Muse. I was going to say...
Muse's birthday, they pulled the Packers. They dropped birthday tweet and offed them.
I was going to say, like, we're going to see how much they like Fitzpatrick, because obviously he's past the deadline now, that 3-week deadline where they had to keep him. Basically, they can cut him at any time. Two tight ends just became available. Now, if Fitzpatrick's hurt, they'd have to waive him injured or put him on IR or something like that, and then figure out an injury settlement later. But if he can't play and they want to pick one of those guys up, they could. It would be a tough ask on a 2-day turnaround or whatever. But those could be potential interesting ones, or they could just do a Messiah Swinson off the practice squad for a week if they needed to. Because Andrew Beck's gone, right? So that's not an option anymore. And then, do they have anyone else? Tight end? Messiah Swinson?
They have a tight end, yeah.
Just Messiah Swinson, that's it. He's the only... Yeah. So we could see a Messiah Swinson debut. We could see a Jamin Davis debut if those two injuries are legit, if they can't play this week.
Yep. And, the Dolphins are a little bit banged up too. They already said Anthony Walker Jr., who's the linebacker, starting linebacker. He's going to be out with a hamstring, and corner Kendall Fuller, who has a concussion, is going to be out too. So, Dolphins are dealing with it themselves. So we're not the only one in this game.
So the Packers are going to win by 30 and everyone's going to have to apologize for it again. Of all, they didn't have Kendall Fuller in this game, so it doesn't really count. But
I did like, who was it? Was it Keyshawn or was it X? Who was like, we won 3 games with the backup quarterback.
It was Keyshawn. I think it was Keyshawn. It was very Keyshawn.
Like, I'm not going to feel bad. Yeah.
People can feel how they want about Keyshawn on the field. Off the field, that dude is awesome. Like that. He's like, he's the ultimate. Like, I don't know if you heard him too. He's like, they asked him about the big force fumble that he had. And he's like, dude, it's been like 10 weeks since I made a play. It's about damn time I made a play in the game. It was like, it's just awesome. Like, totally real about it. He's like, yeah, it's been about 10 weeks since I made a play, so I guess it was probably about time. Or like, just basically tearing himself apart for not making one sooner. But I love that guy in all of his interviews. It's amazing. So, you talked about things coming up at APC. You mentioned, some of that stuff, but what else you got cooking?
We're probably going to have to do some film breakdowns on the spinner stuff. I don't know if it's going to happen before Thanksgiving or after. Actually, I'm going to plan on doing it after.
Just do it during while you're at Thanksgiving. Just at the table.
Mid-turkey? All right. You get 3 things on your plate for Thanksgiving. What are you getting?
Oh, you don't know the history here.
I don't.
I'm anti-Thanksgiving food. I hate all Thanksgiving food for the most part. My usual is a Thanksgiving pizza is what's on my plate every year. So it's, so here's the true story. If we could end up in 3 different scenarios for Thanksgiving, either we're at our house, with just our family, we're at my in-laws, or we're at my family's house. If in one of 3 things will happen, if we go to my in-laws, they're amazing and they will make me my Thanksgiving pizza every single year. And then of course, what happens is you've got all this crappy Thanksgiving food out and this delicious pizza that's sitting out, and everyone looks at it and everyone wants the pizza. So now they have to make multiple Thanksgiving pizzas because everyone wants the pizza instead of the crappy Thanksgiving food. So that's option number 1 that happens. Option number 2 is we go to my family's house and they don't give a rat's ass if I want pizza or not. So I am stuck with the crappy Thanksgiving food if we're going to my family's house. So although I do think they're doing steaks this year, which is much more tolerable. So that I'm excited about that if that ends up coming to fruition. And then if it's at my family's house, what we like to do is with the kids and everyone,
everyone in our family gets to pick their favorite food, and we make everyone's favorite food for the day. And everyone just likes, you know, gets to, you know, kind of chow down on everyone else's favorite food for the day. So that, those are the three scenarios.
Not a turkey guy.
If I had to, though, if you're asking me the question, whatever dinner slash bread roll is going to be at the table is number one, my number one draft pick for sure. I will hope that there is apple pie and not pumpkin pie, because I can't stand pumpkin pie. So I'm going to hope that there's apple pie, and apple pie will be my number two draft pick. And then I really get stuck after that, but I'll probably just take some of, like, I'll just probably take a leg off the turkey and just kind of, you know, chew off of that.
Just carbs.
Yeah.
Andy, the carbs, man.
Carbs in a leg. That's all I'm getting. How about you?
Dark meat roll, mashed potatoes. I'm good. I'm happy.
There you go.
Make them into a sandwich, even better.
Yeah. Like, I could, you know, that's usually what I do too, is I'll take just two pieces of, like, there's like bread or something, like, try to get like two pieces of like bread, you know, just get a, you know, some, I'll probably usually do like breast of that, but like some breast meat that's got the skin on it, just douse it in gravy, just go to town with that. Like, that's workable. All right, Justice, you're the absolute best. Follow him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. And of course, make sure to check out Acme Packing Company every single day at acmepackingcompany.com. That's going to do it for us. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.